Welcome to the Miller's Tale podcast, episode 9. No, you are not hallucinating. So, hello there. I am Mike Whittaker, and this is episode 9 of the Miller's Tale, which I think is going to have to start out with a little bit of a preamble explaining where the hell I've been. So, for those of you who haven't been following the occasional updates on my blog, last year was pretty much spent looking after my parents. We turned up on their doorstep at the prompting of the next door neighbours at the beginning of January, and decided that with hindsight, and lovely stuff hindsight, that they probably shouldn't have been left alone that long for lockdown, and people will tell you anything to stop you from worrying, unfortunately. So Mum passed away in March, which was, to be fair, not unexpected. Anne's dad passed away in July, just to further complicate matters. And Dad, from his own volition, I hasten to add, because people seem to sort of look at you slightly sideways when you say this, found himself a care home, decided he really liked the look of it, and sold the house and moved. So I've been up and down a bit to Hull. Well, I spent most of 2023 on the A15, as far as I can tell. But it's now got to the point where Dad is happily settled. I pop up there most but not every weekend. And I am slowly getting back into the wargaming hobby, although, to be fair, I've quite frankly allowed myself to be self-indulgent in that for the past few months, in that I'm doing the stuff that I want to do that keeps me happy and sane, and getting to the point where I'm up for doing the things that I want to do but at work. And yes, that does mean the Duxbury Tanny RM Compendium, for those of you waiting eagerly to see how long it would be before I mentioned it. But first, the news. Going to stick mainly to club and local hobby news rather than actual what's been released, because frankly, trying to do a new releases thing in a podcast that you've only had two episodes of in the last 5 years is probably a little bit silly. So, Peterborough War Games Club, still chairman, because nobody else is dumb enough to take the job off me, although I have threatened them occasionally with resigning just to see what happens. I am actually quite enjoying it. We survived lockdown, for which I'd very, very much like to thank my fellow committee members. That's Ash, Pippa, Reuben, and Colin, and Dan, who stood in briefly. We found a new venue because the St. John Jambones building in Peterborough decided it wasn't taking external bookings anymore, partly as a result of lockdown. So we're now, for those of you who made it to the last Poshlard, or two, happily ensconced at the George Olcock, which is a very nice neighbourhood centre in Standground, which is in the southeast of Peterborough. Fairly easy to get to, better parking than the John's Ambulance building, and all in all, they're lovely people, and I wouldn't change it for the world, given the choice. As you may have heard me mention just then, we've managed to run a couple of posh lards. These have been great fun. We've had various people come and bring all manner of interesting games. This coming year we are proposing to do it again because we're mad, and frankly it's a really good day just to hang around and natter with your friends and play silly games. What more is there to do? Posh Lard will be on the 16th of November 2024. Expect to see booking forms and stuff going out in the next month or so, and hopefully we'll get even more people than last time. On the subject of shows and the like, Harrowwood is back. For those of you who somehow managed to miss the memo, Harrowwood 2023 was actually our second most successful show ever in terms of numbers through the door. And on top of that, we actually managed to get a little bit past break even, which is very good for everybody's peace of mind, because it's been a little tight for the last two before lockdown. And it's very good to not have that issue this time out. Particularly like to thank all the traders who braved the post-COVID world to come. We had some fabulous traders, some really good times, some great show games as well. And I'm very happy to say that this year's will be on the 8th of September, which is not our usual first Sunday in September, because the venue was booked by a very keen wedding couple who seem to have got in about 2 years in advance, as far as we can tell. Hopefully we'll revert to first Sunday in September going forward, but this year it's on the 8th. The only unavoidable problem with this is that Crisis have just rearranged themselves for the 7th of September, which is the previous day, so I think it's safe to say that we won't see many of the Lardies, since that does seem to be their normal weekend of drunken debauchery in Antwerp. Can't be helped. We miss you guys. Come along to Posh Lard instead. It'll be fun. On the more personal side of news, I have ditched my 3D printer, mostly because it was falling apart and the manufacturers, who are CEL, have stopped supporting the printer. In fact, they have discontinued selling it. Their service website has gone away. The sole support for it is now a Facebook group. And frankly, it's a really nice printer. I really enjoyed having it, but it's very much the Mac of printers, in that it's not quite at the no user serviceable parts inside, but it's not far off it. And it hit the point where, yeah, I'm sure I could have fixed it if I'd pushed it enough, but to be honest, not worth the effort. So I have changed. I now have a FlashForge 5M Pro, which, if you are in the market for nice, low maintenance, easy to use, idiot proof printers, I've got to say I love it. It is also blisteringly fast. I keep posting print times for various bits of 3D printed scenery on the appropriate company's Kickstarter Discord, and various people look at me and go, how fast? Its head will do something like 600 millisecond, which is enough to zip around the build space very, very fast indeed. And at the point where they actually put some quite clever software in there to make it break properly at the corners. Yeah, so there's that. I also succumbed, largely with a part of using up mum's inheritance, the bit once we'd paid off the mortgage, which was very nice. I have bought a laser cutter. I have an X2S1, which is a big A3 bed laser cutter, which will handle most of the normal sizes of MDF that any reasonable person might want to print on. I'm told it'll handle up to 10mm, but I can't imagine ever needing to do so. It'll certainly cut through 2 and 3mm MDF for bases and little bits of buildings and the like the proverbial hot knife through butter. It does require a little bit of maintenance. Mostly you've got to remember to clean the lens every so often and take the tray out and hit it with a pressure washer to remove little bits of burnt MDF off it. But I am loving it. It's a fully enclosed Class 1 laser device, which means that it, once you've shut the lid, you don't need to wear safety goggles. Unlike the... I have to get this right. The D1, which is what I was originally going to buy, which is not enclosed, and as such you have to wear goggles while you're using it. It's very much a caution, do not look into laser with remaining eye kind of product. But I very rapidly returned that and got the S1, just for general safety's sake. Also, because we have a scheduled Wednesday paint and natter session at my place from the club, it's quite good to be able to have it running while people are in the room without having to issue everybody with a pair of goggles. So, yeah, that's cool. I gave serious thought to a resin printer. And I have to say, it was one of the times when I found myself very much missing the late Mike Hobbs, as we'd had a number of discussions on the subject of figure printing and when it would hit the point where you could have a figure printer at home. And it's there, Hobbsy. Wish you were here to see it, mate. But I have a couple of friends at the club who have perfectly serviceable resin printers that cost them well under a four-figure sum. And to be honest, I am slightly too disorganised for responsible use of a resin printer. The stuff's nasty. You have to spend a lot of time cleaning up after yourself. But the results are amazing. If you want to pop on to the club's Facebook page, you can see some of the things that Dan Richardson is doing for a One Page Rules fantasy escalation campaign. And the detail on those is quite amazing. It is the future, as can be told from the number of companies who are starting to sell you STL files as an option in their Kickstarter for figures and so on and so forth. And, yeah, miss you, Hobbsy. Would have liked that argument. Bless. A listener asks, yes, apparently I still have listeners. Tiglan from over the other side of the globe asks via Messenger, and I answered him via Messenger, but I might as well answer here as well. Just a query if you have time. Do you still play Full Thrust? Sadly, no. I picked up a bunch of ships for various nefarious purposes from Plastic Soldier Company, of which I think Full Thrust and Mike Hutchinson's A Billion Suns were on the list. But they've sat in what Jeff Newsden calls the Cabinet of Temporal Insufficiency, waiting for me to do something with them. Gangs of Rome? No. I have a bunch of Rome scenery, which was largely earmarked for various things like my D&D campaign that was set in a fantasy Venice, for which they were quite useful buildings, which was all lovely right up to the point where lockdown hit and we went to doing it all virtually. To be honest, I can't actually remember if I ever played Gangs of Rome at the club. I was certainly as much interested in the scenery for its own sake as I was for the game, which is quite true of a lot of games. Gaslands. No, but, I think is the answer. We were sitting in the club's Wednesday Paint and Bitch session last week and discussing Gaslands versus Gaslands 2. Sorry, Mike, but we think Gaslands 1 was better. And Dan in particular was discussing the force he was going to build. I have a random silly idea of building a force based on the guys at Freedom Factory in Florida, because they've got some interestingly fun distinctive cars. And I think we were discussing the idea of resurrecting it at the club just because it's fun, it's silly, and it doesn't require a great deal of investment in anything, really, other than a rule book, a battle mat, a few gates, and some Hot Wheels. So, yeah, that. And the obvious last one, Dux Britanniarum. No, but, again. We are hopefully going to Sutton Hoo over the summer, where my good friend Andy Hawes has moved from Peterborough to be with his new lady friend. He, the jammy whatnot, is now actually working at Sutton Hoo and has managed them to persuade them to put on assorted war games. So there's a day this summer. I'll get you the dates for the next episode of the podcast. Yes, there will be a next episode. And hopefully we are going to take a game down. I am agitating for it to be Dux Britanniarum. And I'm certainly tagging that as motivation to finish off the Blasted Compendium, because I want it finished, because what there is looks really good. And mostly it's a couple of little bits of writing, and then the dreaded index, which I am at some point actually going to be able to just knuckle down and do. I'm not going to make any promises for a date. It will not be this Easter. I can promise you that much. So that's your answer, basically. Currently, to be honest, what are we playing at the club? We are playing a lot of bolt action, surprisingly. We've got three or four people joined us on, and a couple who've returned who play a fair bit of bolt action. The various one-page rules, Exploit Zero. We came up with yet another water tanker variant, as if there aren't enough, which this is in fact a third generation in that it's Water Pirate, based on Water Cowboy, which had its birth, what do you call it, I suppose, at Poshlard last year. People seem to like it. We just missed the deadline for getting a write-up into last year's Lard magazine, so hopefully we can manage it in this year's. It's just a piece of light-hearted fun that looks very like Water Cowboy, but has ships and slower rate of fire weapons and boarding pikes and swinging from the yardarm and silly things like that. What else are we playing? Exploit Zero. Dan Richardson, not to be confused with any of the other Dans, is helping play test what a... Yeah, I've forgotten what it's called. Insert sound effects of man typing frantically and scrabbling. What a Commando. It's John Savage's latest attempt to riff on Water Tanker, and basically seems to involve charging around various bits of the modern world, rescuing people from their own fates or raiding places. Or in short, it's a good Special Forces game, and as I said, Dan is playtesting, so look out for more on that front. What else? Since I've got the club forum open, rather than trying to do it from memory, I can report that we've been playing various Napoleonic campaigns, courtesy of Martin and the Crazy Gang, who've also been bringing us some 1930s imaginations and other things like that. It's the usual widely varied selection of stuff, mostly because we are not one of those clubs that makes you play one thing. But I should add, the other thing we have been playing quite a bit of is Battletech Alpha Strike now. If you've been following the Meeples and Miniatures Facebook group, you will be aware that I have just started a podcast called Tales from the Periphery, which is intended as a UK community Battletech podcast. This was just an itch I needed to scratch because, to be honest, I have been playing Battletech for longer than I care to remember, and I had genuinely forgotten how good and how much fun it was. So, that's it for the news section of this podcast. For the long Mike Rambles section at the end, as I tend to call it in my notes, I am, for obvious reasons, going to talk about Battletech. This is going to fall into the category of rule sets I know well enough to review from experience rather than from, oh, look, it's shiny and new, what does it do? And largely, I want to get this off my chest for a number of reasons. One, I'm having real fun playing it, and I don't see why I shouldn't share that with people. Two, I'd like to basically leave it as the marker for... Here's where I'm going to transition any further discussion on Battletech into Tales from the Periphery. And three, it's a damn fine game and it deserves a review. And for those of you who are about to hit the pause button and say, big stumpy sci-fi robots, don't see why I should listen to that, do yourself a favour, have a listen, and perhaps you'll understand why I am loving it as a game. And it's something you can certainly dip into. It's easy to learn. It's easy to play. It doesn't require a massive expenditure in bits and pieces, unless you're mad like me. And generally, come on, give me a chance. Battletech, then. Big, stompy robot combat. It's a game that's been going around since the mid-80s and hit to the point that around the turn of the 90s, It was pretty damn popular. I used to play it with my housemates down in Gravesend. We had a campaign that ran for the best part of a year and a half, which was brilliantly good fun. I also spent quite a bit of time on an online version before MechWarrior Online, for those who know about that, which was also really good fun. It spawned, what, several computer games, a role-playing game, a Saturday morning kids cartoon series, which was surprisingly good considering. Apparently, I'm given to understand from watching interviews with a couple of people that the problem was that the computer animation was so much better than the cell animation. They were basically using cell animation for the characters and computer animation for the mechs, that they had to dumb down the computer animation and produce some in-game rationale for it, because otherwise the jar between the two was just too big. Also, apparently, it played slightly fast and loose with the in-game canon, and apparently this has been reconciled by, apparently, in-game, the cartoon series exists as a piece of propaganda, which has apparently tickled several of the people involved with the recording of the show, who were not aware of this due to being mostly animators and the like rather than hardcore gamers. But anyway, it is Battletech's 40th anniversary this year. And I guess the recent upturn in it, outside of the club, has been largely due to the fact that Catalyst, who now own the rights, have run two very, very successful Kickstarters. Apparently the one they did just before lockdown, if memory serves, zipped through its target in pretty much the time it took to hit the play button, as far as I can tell, and raised some insane amount. And the follow-up campaign, which took place last year, has also raised masses of money and resulted in lots of shiny plastic crack, for those of us who collect shiny plastic crack. From a club point of view, Dan P, as opposed to Dan R down the club, has also always been a fan, and he started a club tournament running the classic rules, which are the ones that if you played Battletech back in the 90s you're probably well aware of, which we're just in the process of wrapping up now. And actually, for some strange and unbelievable reason, I am actually in the lead with my partner Andy Meller, who is probably the tactical brains of the outfit. I'm just lucky with the dice rolls, I think. But that is Battletech Classic, which, as I occasionally introduce it, this is your dad's Battletech. If you played it back then and you look at the current set of rules, you probably won't see an awful lot of difference, because one of the things that very much endears me to Battletech is the fact that, unlike certain people I could name, in fact a distressingly large number of people, they have not as such rewritten the rules just for the sake of selling more figures, making your armies obsolete, etc., etc. You can turn up for a game of classic Battletech set in the original era the game was set in the 80s and 90s, with your miniatures and your rules. And I think there's two major rules changes, both of which are intuitively obvious, and you wonder why they didn't do them earlier. What they have done, which I think is actually remarkably clever, but much more in a much more controlled way than the likes of Games Workshop do it, is they have, every so often, they roll the lore forward a couple of decades. And the major one, when I was first playing Battletech, was they jumped forward in two stages from 3025 to 3039 to 3056 and the arrival of the clans, which was a bit controversial, because part of what they were doing with each roll forward was introducing more tech. And yeah, sure, it's a calculated ploy that you can, at that point, if you want, you can buy some of the newer mechs, you can buy the expanded version of the rules that covers the new weaponry inventions, if you want. But you don't have to. And this is, I think, one of the things that BattleTech have been much more open and clear about, in that the introductory rule set, the one that you can buy right now to teach you, called BattleTech, is a box called A Game of Armoured Combat, which you can get for about 45 quid, contains 8 mechs and a set of rules which, if you played it in the 90s, you wouldn't know they were any different. And that, I think, made me very happy when it came to picking up the game for the club campaign, because you just fall back in and you just get on with it. Now, for a long time, I have to admit, I wasn't terribly happy with some of the changes they made in terms of lore and technology, because I've ranted about this on the podcast, in fact, on the blog, in fact, that one of the issues I had was that the way the original rules were set out and balanced, there were no weapons that could kill you in one shot at long range, except on a really fluky dice roll. There was nothing that did more than the head armour of a mech that could kill you more than 9 hexes out, where long range is more like 21. And the advent of the clans and the new technology did actually change that. And I have to admit, I probably bore Fazer, as it was then, and Catalyst, a 25-year grudge for that. But I think I've got over it now. So, yeah. So that's BattleTech, classic BattleTech. It's basically a hex game. It's almost a board game. You can play it with bottle tops and a hex grid if you want. It's still, you can play it with the same mechs you played 40 years ago. There are map sheets available 40 years ago that you can still play on. Catalyst, who are the current producers, have put out a whole massive range of new map sheets and new mechs, which are possibly some of the nicest sculptures. It's been my pleasure, with my somewhat ham-fisted painting style and lousy eyesight, to paint, in that they take paint beautifully. If you happen to see my little piece in the February edition of Miniature Wargames, which was basically how I paint BattleTechs, and in fact how I'll paint anything these days, I make no bones about the fact that I've had 2 cataract operations. I have always been incredibly dominantly right-eyed. I have no depth perception whatsoever, and I am somewhat ham-fisted, and the Catalyst BattleTech miniatures are, and a lot of modern sculpts now, are beautiful from the point of view of taking paint using whatever, slap chop, contrast paint, however you want to call it. I am slowly, well, not so slowly actually, acquiring an awful lot of toys, and I think part of that is I'm probably going to see if I can become a demo agent for the game, because I very much enjoy teaching it. It's great fun. Now, BattleTech, yeah. There are, in fact, 2 different rule sets, and this is going to be a kind of common theme through this. What I jokingly refer to, as I said, as your dad's BattleTech, is classic BattleTech, which is the hex-based game. They also, in about 2015, came out with a very streamlined fast-play set of rules called Alpha Strike, which are very much targeted at the wargamer rather than the board gamer. They're a much less crunchy rule set, and it is genuinely possible to teach it such that your players can pretty much get on and play the game themselves after the first turn. We've literally done that at shows recently. We've had people turn up who've never played it before. We've showed them the rules, and Dan Phillips or I have basically been there to say, to adjudicate on line of sight and answer obscure rule questions. The core mechanics are beautifully simple without being simplistic. And I'm hard pushed, actually. Classic BattleTech is crunchy. If you like your war games with detail, and that goes to the level of individual hit locations and tracking internal damage and keeping track of your mech's heat, and you want to play 4 mechs aside and finish in a club evening, then classic is for you. If you want something a bit more sweeping on an ordinary wargames table, Then Alpha Strike is certainly worth a go. It's really, really quick to learn, and it is brilliant fun. Also, I'm having an absolute whale of a time building lots of... It's roughly 8 mil scale. I think you could safely say it's epic in the traditional sense of the word, not the one that people seem to be using it at the moment, which means lots of smaller toys on the table. But it is 1/265th, I believe, is the official scale, which means there's a lot of buildings from the likes of TT Combat for Drop Zone Commander and Blots, any number of sort of leftover bits of epic Warhammer scenery you're wondering what to do with. There's a whole bunch of STL files, that kind of thing. You can build some really quite fun tables. I mean, you can go to stupid extremes like we do, in that I bought a bunch of terrain from a company called Brutal Cities in Australia, who basically, as the name suggests, the guy who runs the company is a huge fan of brutalist architecture, so big, blocky, solid concrete buildings, of which the high point is a thing he calls the Transformer Tower, which is quite literally 2 foot tall in 8 mil scale. We have that on one of our Alphatoic Strike tables, along with a full-scale Battletech dropship, which, according to the lore, is about 81 metres high, which translates to about a foot, which, when you consider that the mechs are about 50 mil tall and figures are 8 mil tall, is just as big and imposing as it sounds. Oh yeah, there's basically, you have crunchy Battletech and fast play Battletech, and they're both fun, and they're both well worth playing. In addition to that, there are 2 role-playing games, as if you couldn't have guessed. And much the same way, there's a crunchy one and a fast play one. The crunchy one used to be called Mech Warrior, and I believe is now called A Time of War, because Microsoft had the copyright on Mech Warrior for the video game series. It's crunchy. It's one of those, if you're familiar with something like Traveller, the only thing it really has that separates it from Traveller is you can't die during character generation. Which, if you're old enough to remember that, I'm sorry. It's a nice system. It's, if you like your role-playing games with excruciating detail, which I do, actually, then it's a great game. If you want something that's a bit more light storytelling... lots more hand-wavy and narrative-driven, then there is MechWarrior Destiny, which fits in much the same way as Alpha Strike fits with classic Battletech. Both extremely good games. I am planning on running a campaign for one or the other, I still haven't decided, later in the year, which should be fun. Essentially, that's the thing that's been taking up quite a bit of my time, purely because it's been a delightful turn your brain off and just have fun game, which, frankly, after the year I've had, I have very much needed. The only thing I would add to that, and I think it's the thing that sets Battletech aside from any number of similar big stumpy robot or big muscly guys in power armor or whatever kind of game, is that the lore, the fluff, the thing that I went on about for a whole flipping podcast a few episodes ago, about a decade ago probably, don't start, is there is literally a millennium of lore. The Battletech universe diverges from ours in the 80s, literally at about the point the game was created. They decided to put a marker in the sand somewhere about the time of the fall of the Soviet Union and diverge from there. And there is lore, there is essentially backstory up to about 3010, after which... the campaign, the game itself is set in about 3025, and as I said, has done periodic jumps forward. But there are an innumerable number of source books. There are well over 100 novels, which I think puts it a close second behind Warhammer. However, they do seem to have developed slightly more of a sense of continuity, in that there's very little. There's a few places where you sort of look slightly sideways and go, you missed something there. But the lore is consistent. I mean, we're basically talking Game of Thrones in a couple of hundred light years sphere around Earth. And it's clearly a setting that's been deliberately designed that way, such that it will always generate conflict, because when it comes down to it, it's a war game. And also, it is very much detailed. There is a whole bunch of character-driven story. There is enough lore to keep you going for, well, frankly, there's a guy who's producing podcasts on the backstory starting at around 2200-2300. He's only just about got to 2800, and he's probably recorded about a day of audio and video. It tends to engender that kind of obsession. There's a fan-based wiki which is on its 50,000th page and counting. Again, I love the lore. I'm a sucker for a good story. I very much, if you haven't figured it out from listening to this podcast or reading my blog by now, I like my games to have backstory, which is why I mostly play historical. But in the event where a game turns out to have real-world history levels of detail in its narrative and tells a damn good yarn with it, that's just the icing on the cake for me. So, yeah, that's essentially why I am playing a lot of Battletech at the moment, having rediscovered it and realised how much I enjoyed it in the past. I make no apologies for it. However, I'm largely going to shut up about it on The Miller's Tale, because that's not what it's there for, and I'm going to move the Battletech stuff on to Tales from the Periphery, of which I'm hoping to be recording episode 1, having recorded episode 0, next week. So fear not, gentle listener, if you've stuck it out for this long without an episode and the current nearly 40 minutes of me rambling on various subjects, The Miller's Tale will continue, and it's going to be largely about historical wargaming and the stuff I like in that field, because I still have plenty of stuff I want to do. There's a Dux Britannia compendium waiting for me to get to it. There are several boxes of Epic American Civil War waiting for me to paint in breaks between painting Battlenecks. And there's a whole bunch of other stuff going on down the club, which I am not going to forget, because, frankly, I just enjoy the hobby in all its points. So, with that in mind, then, that's it from me for this episode. I guess we'll be back, hopefully, somewhat sooner than last time. I promised to be back somewhat sooner. Hopefully the world has straightened out. It's very nice to be sat behind a mic and waffling again. And hopefully this has made some kind of coherent sense. And as the saying goes, catch you on the flip side and roll good dice. The Miller's Tale is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License. If you've made it this far, this is the point at which I realise that it's been 5 years since I last stuck an episode in the iTunes podcast feed, and I cannot for the life of me remember how to do it. So, this was recorded on Thursday the 29th of February. Let's see how long it takes me to remember how the next bit works. Bye for now.